It's exactly 8 o'clock, and welcome to the Mornings with Ed show. And I know that while someone is on hold, they can hear the music in the background. We have our economic expert, Laureen Gilbert from Wealthwise Financial. She's got to be thinking, what the hell was that? What was I listening to? Good morning, Laureen. Thank you for being
Good
here this morning.
Morning. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and thank you for the patience.
What was that, by the way?
Yeah, it was a song by the Tubes called White Punks on Dope from the late 80s.
Okay.
So, yeah, it is everything that it is everything the title cracks it up to be. It really is.
It's right.
it's a mess.
I
hope you're doing well this week.
Doing great. Thank you.
We've got a lot of things to discuss. I want to talk about what happened late last night first. The Senate voted to extend the Small Business Relief Program for an additional 5 weeks to utilize the remaining, and I can't believe I'm saying this, unused $134 billion from the original $660 billion relief. With the worst thing to ever happen to small businesses in this country, how did we leave so much money on the table?
Well, you know, my whole business is working with business owners. We're a wealth management and financial planning firm working with business owners and executives. And I will tell you, many business owners were hesitant to ask for that loan. And there are a few reasons why. One was the concern. In fact, I just spoke yesterday with a nonprofit, one of our clients that's a nonprofit organization, and they said, we know we're not going to be able to rehire the workers. There's no way we can do that. Therefore, if we take it, they know it's going to be a loan. They know it's not going to be a grant. And therefore, we don't want to put the nonprofit in jeopardy with debt. So that's part of it for sure. I will also say, unbelievably, there are people that just haven't gotten around to it. And we're trying to make it without taking this grant/loan. But the great news is, like you said, the Senate voted, and don't forget, they voted unanimously. Right. I mean, when have they ever voted on anything unanimously in the Senate?
I actually shed a tear when I heard that. Okay.
You know, it's great to see because we need that kind of bipartisanship coming together to get us through this pandemic and to the other side. So that is encouraging to see both parties coming together for small business and extending the PPP. Now, I'll also say, you know, they're still working on the next round of stimulus. So they're trying to figure out what that needs to look like. And I am encouraging a more targeted approach. You know, what we've had so far has just been, you know, blanket approach, which was needed in an emergency measure. But right now we need to be very targeted where emergency relief funds go.
Would you also suggest that maybe it'd be a little more forgiving, like that nonprofit wouldn't have the issue of having to hire back everyone?
Right. Well, I'm certainly in favor of doing as much as possible to help struggling businesses and nonprofits. That needs to be done. I think when you look at where the pain is right now, it's still in the leisure restaurants, hotels, like you said, even nonprofits. So once again, maybe being very targeted, looking at, like Marco Rubio said, zip codes of areas where people are in most need. So, you know, I think from here, where we need to go is really helping those who are struggling the most, whether it be the individuals or whether it be the businesses.
Right. And I read that 2/3 of the businesses that actually took it have already spent it. So there is going to have to be a...
It was needed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Needed.
And there is going to have to be a need down the road, because knowing that we opened up too soon and irresponsibly across several states, in Florida, Georgia, Arizona, and I'm sorry to say, including Texas, and here in California, has our rush to open and the possible shutting down of these economies, especially here in California, has it taken us to a point of no return where the inevitability of another $500 billion maybe is what we're looking at?
Well, so I'd like to back it up. I don't think it was nothing was done. I don't think it was done irresponsibly. I think we're in unprecedented times, and governors and states are trying to do their best to get their states open, which we need to get our states open. And it's all been an experiment, everything from the national measures down to the municipal measures. I mean, we've all been, it's the blind leading the blind, not sure what to do. And so, you know, also don't forget, we've had huge protests in areas that very likely, which have been, you know, confirmed, have caused more cases. So it's not just what the governors have been doing as far as opening states, but it's what individuals have been doing. And that what I would say is every individual needs to take personal responsibility for being safe, wearing masks, being careful around people, especially those, you know, the elderly, which we know are at the greatest risk. So people individually need to take responsibility and be safe. So when you talk about, you know, what happens now? Yes, the states are having to backtrack quite a bit. And even California, which has been very careful, but once again, allowed protests and, you know, allowed people to be, you know, congregating together. It wasn't about people getting together in their homes. A lot of this has to do with people who were out and about and not wearing masks. So, you know, now that's causing all of us harm economically, and it's going to take a long time to recover, which, of course, you know, Ed, I've said all along, this was not going to be a V-shaped recovery. I never saw it that way. Right. I think it's going to be a long road. And we've heard the Fed this week indicating the economy is still fragile. And with this taking longer, it's going to be, you know, a long road economically.
Now, while I don't disagree with most of what you said, I'm going to go back to Florida in particular, and when the science said that we should socialize, or we should safe social distance, and we should wear masks, that they actively chose to continue going the way they were and continuing with the bars open and such.
Well, the beaches, right. Yeah, the beaches and the bars. And I agree that that was a huge problem, and why I completely agree that, you know, bars need to be shut and people should not be congregating on beaches. I agree.
Now, you mentioned masks, and I found this just wonderful that Goldman Sachs says that by wearing masks, we could really see 5% growth. Am I crazy when I read that?
I hadn't seen that headline. I love it.
I saw it this morning.
Yeah, that's a great one. You know, so two things too, and I'm surprised that we're not hearing more about it. But I think the combination of masks and shields, because, you know, people are worried about their eyes or, right, you know, anything getting in their eyes. And so if you have a mask and a shield, I think that offers two different types of protections and would allow more businesses to open. You know, we just hosted this week a webinar on, you know, the idea of reopening business, you know, following COVID. And we had an HR expert discussing, you know, all the different regulations, what's needed for businesses and business owners, and, you know, providing the PPE for employees and having a written policy. So I think there's a lot that can be done for businesses to start reopening, but caution needs to be taken.
I had a text waiting for me when I got here this morning from a listener who listened or was in on that webinar and absolutely loves the information that you give. So, yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So I've got to,
very good to hear.
I've got to sit in on your next one. This week, the Supreme Court has been very busy, and school choice came up, and it affects us financially. How is that?
Right. So your taxpayer dollars go to fund public schools, but it's not been allowed, or there's been dispute about whether that money, in a sense, can also go towards private schools. In other words, individuals getting a credit back on taxes for having the choice of going to private schools. And the Supreme Court narrowly voted in favor of that being allowed. In other words, it not being banned, as it had been brought up from Montana. And so that is a great win for parents and families that want to be able to send their kids to a school of their choice and use those dollars that we pay into the system towards going to private schools. So it does, you know, it allows more choice for parents, and it also means that what it does, in effect, with public schools is say, hey, if the public schools are doing a good job, then families aren't going to need to make that choice. I think Laguna Beach is a great example of great schools where, you know, if a family lives in Laguna Beach, you know, we have great options here that we can be proud of our school system. But not all communities have that. And so parents will be able to make those decisions. So a good win for parents, parental rights, and people wanting to be able to make the choice for private schools.
But public schools will suffer the brunt of lacking some funding now that they would have normally gotten to help improve their situations.
But once again, means that it just like private enterprise says, you know, you're doing a good job, you're going to get more customers. You're not doing a good job, guess what? People are going to go somewhere else. So it offers, in a sense, some competition to the public schools.
Okay, I'm going to put that one on. I'm going to put that one actually in the microwave for a little bit, and we're going to come. Okay. We're going to come back to that one in the coming few weeks. I'd like to come back to that over the course of time. Now, I want to go international with you for a while, and we know that China's having tensions with everybody, India and Hong Kong, but specifically their tensions with India. How is that affecting us? So India has banned WeChat and TikTok and like 60 other Chinese tech companies. How is that affecting? How is that going to eventually affect us? And I have a follow up question after that too.
Yeah. So you have two countries with over a billion people, huge part of the global population. And by the way, not only a huge part of the population, a huge part of the younger population. So with that is the future of the world, both of those countries, because of demographics. And it offers opportunities as well as risks. So on the opportunity side, quite a few consumers. And both of those countries are developing their middle class, so people coming up from poverty into the middle class. However, there's also a strike contrast in the way that those two countries are governed. China, with their aggressive stance now, clearly showing that, yes, they are a communist country. Do not forget that. Right. And their, you know, actions in Hong Kong prove that. And India, in contrast, being much more a democracy. You know, not perfect, but trying to be a democracy. Right. And with that, I think that India offers more economic promise than China in a lot of ways. Now, the difference, though, from a supply chain is that China has the supply chain figured out. In other words, within China, you can get everything done. You know, a company looking to source what they need can get everything they need from China, and China has spent decades getting that figured out. No one else has that. So that is our problem, you know, as we look to bringing manufacturing back into the United States, looking to wean away from our dependency on China. We don't have all of those things. We could be stuck. In other words, a company could be stuck with one widget that they have to get from China, where they might be able to get everything else. So the big talk has been, can other Asian countries replicate what China has done? And certainly areas like Vietnam and Korea other places are trying to do that, but they don't have it down the way China does. What I'm hopeful about is that India, being the democracy that it is, has much more opportunity. And then when we look at bringing in workers, you've heard me talk about bringing in skilled workers, right. India is a great source for us to bring in those skilled workers.
Well, I think that was my follow-up question. We know that they have the talent. We know they have the talent and the skills, mm-hmm. and certainly the technical know-how. Mm-hmm. Can they, because China's GDP has been dropping, it isn't what it was 10 right. years ago, can they be the next China?
Absolutely. I think there's been a race from both of those countries for dominance in a lot of ways, dominance in what we call the emerging market region. And once again, I think, and even from, let me just say, from a public market perspective, China has a lot of problems with their accounting. I've talked about that before. And India is in better shape that way, more transparency and, more accounting standards that are globally recognized. So I think India has a lot of possibilities.
Okay. Last thing about China, and I'll leave you alone about China. They also mm-hmm. have problems in Hong Kong. And we know right. we know the market in Hong Kong is something that we look at. We follow it very closely. And with that said, a lot of companies are Cathay Pacific, the company that owns Cathay Pacific, also HSBC. These are some pretty high profile businesses with deep roots there. What's going to happen to them?
Well, interestingly enough, back in November of 2019, I was interviewed by Bloomberg, and I stated back then that the unrest in Hong Kong had the potential of leading us into a global recession. And at the time, it seemed, unfathomable. We couldn't even imagine. We could not see that. But my point was, when you have unrest in an area that's a global hub, which Hong Kong is, a global hub, and you have destabilization, it has the potential of creating a domino effect. And what ended up happening was the pandemic was the catalyst that then took that weakness and set off a global recession. So in fact, we couldn't see it. I couldn't see that a pandemic was coming. But my point was, like I said, that when you have an area that's destabilized. So I would say that is still a very unstable area of the world that has global ramifications because it is a financial hub. So and I think that many of those companies are going to relocate. I think they will have to, because China once again is making it clear, we're a communist country. We're going to stomp our feet around here, and I say companies beware. You may need to relocate to a different area in the region.
Right. Right. That makes sense. One final question before I let you go. In a couple of hours, we're expecting, or maybe even less, we're expecting to hear from the governor as far as some major things he's thinking about. And Orange County specifically will probably be targeted. If, in fact, we have to shut businesses down here for another month, do we see a much more severe need for additional PPP and fast?
Yes, and I think that the federal government understands that, whether we go back into a lockdown or not. What I will say, Ed, on a positive note, I'd like to maybe end on a positive note.
Yes, let's do that.
We just got our PMI numbers out on manufacturing, and we're at 52.6%. And for listeners who don't know what that means we're back in growth mode. That's huge.
It is.
To go from a contractionary stance back into an expansionary stance is very positive. Now, and that's, so 50 is that break even. If you're below 50, you're in a contraction. If you're above 50, you're in a growth expansionary mode. And 52.6 is a, you know, a solid growth number. Right. So what it shows is if, you know, when we are able to open, which I know we're in that struggling place right now, we can be hopeful that our economy will get back into growth mode. So we'll all just work hard on getting there and work hard on doing it in a safe way.
Not just giving us all the facts and the information and the math, but she brings sunshine into the studio here. Laureen Gilbert, WealthWise Financial Services. How do we find you?
WealthWiseFinancial.com or 949-748-1177.
And if you missed any portion of this, you can catch it on the KXFM website. It'll be podcast. I'll put that up a little bit later on this morning. Laureen, thank you again for spending time with us. It is so important to us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. You as well.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.